I spent a lot of time. I spent a lot of time teaching on the Roswell incident. Something happened at Roswell in the mid-1940s, and the government covered it up. Too much to deny. And too many people saying there was a UFO crash, the Army conducted, and the Air Force a cover-up. And a lot of witnesses claim bodies were found. The UFO phenomenon is like, I repeat, parapsychology. It is no longer intelligent to deny extrasensory perception. All you do is reveal your ignorance of the facts. Reputable universities have researched it enough to settle the issue. It occurs. The question is how and what manner. And by what force or entity. Likewise, UFOs. I mean, it's axiomatic. Unidentified flying objects are seen all the time. But in the generic meaning of UFOs, as not just unidentified, but unexplained flying objects. And I believe with a pattern of being directed by intelligent beings, whether in the objects or remote, is beyond debate anymore. The issue is how and by whom and with what force. Now, my business, in the strictest old-fashioned meaning of the word, is to be a Christian apologist. The word has taken on a negative meaning, whereas it originally, in its etymology, had a very positive meaning, to present a defense, or even more accurately, an offense, to give reasons for a belief or a position. I don't like to see people with a Christian faith that's so narrow-minded, like the Flat Earth Society, that your faith's destroyed when you encounter reality. For Christians to stick their head in the sand and deny UFOs is to set yourself up to be shot down like the medievalists who believed the earth was flat. To come up with a theology that says there can be never be life, never find life on any other planet's ridiculous. The whole universe is God's. If I were him, I'd get bored with us quickly. I mean, surely the God we serve can do better than us. Now, we're pretty high on his agenda, considering what he gave his son for and what his son did. But we do not complete God's agenda. Likewise, UFOs. I'm going to read the Bible to you. Ezekiel. Now it came to pass in the 30th year, in the 4th month, on the 5th day of the month, as I was among the captives by the river of Hebar, that the heavens were opened, and I saw visions of God. In the 5th day of the month, which was the 5th year of King Jehoiakim's captivity, the word of the Lord came expressly unto Ezekiel the priest, the son of Buzi, in the land of the Chaldeans by the river Hebar, and the hand of the Lord was there upon him. Now that's a summary statement. Ezekiel did not sit down and write his prophecy. Scribes picked it up and recorded it. As Jeremiah prophesying in Jerusalem, scribes would write down what he said, tack it on the door of the temple, and scribes were very careful to gather the prophecies and assimilate them. They didn't sit down and write letters like the epistles of the New Testament. And this is a summary opening statement by somebody that didn't know any more where the river Hebar was than you do. Scholars have struggled with that for years. They cannot find the river Hebar in the ancient capital of Babylon, in and around Babylon. However, the Assyrian kingdom has already fallen. This is the fifth year of King Jehoiakim's captivity. Nebuchadnezzar has already risen in Chaldea and swept northward into the vacuum created by the fall of the kingdom of Nineveh, the Assyrian kingdom, upriver on the Tigris. The pressure from the Medes or northern Iran that was the threat at the time Sennacherib and his successors of the Assyrian kingdom conquered Samaria and most of Judea, carried the northern kingdom and a lot of the southern captives or southern kingdom's people captive, and resettled them along the boundary between Assyria, upriver on the Tigris River, and the Medes in the northern plateau of Iran. These resettled house of Israel, Israelites, called Beit Kumri by the Assyrians, sons of Umri, because of the prominence of their sixth king, Humri, who moved the capital from Shiloh to Samaria. He was so prominent that all the citizens of the northern kingdom and all the citizens carried from Judah were called Beit Kumri, house or sons of Kumri. Instead of being a protection against the Iranians or the Medes, they joined them as mercenaries. So in fact, the Assyrian kingdom had collapsed. The Medes could not occupy the Assyrian kingdom because Darius had united the tribes of Persia and was pressing north through Iran and was assembling at that very time, conquering the Medes and assembling the Medo-Persian Empire. So the vacuum of the geographic territory of the old Assyrian kingdom was now part of the territory of Chaldea. So Hebar could be anywhere in the ancient, original, downriver Babylonian city-state kingdom, or it could be anywhere in the Chaldean Empire, which included the territory formerly ruled by Assyria. The closest you will ever come to identifying Hebar is the land of Habor by the river Gozan and Hala, which 2 Kings 17 says is where the Assyrians resettled the people they conquered of the house of Israel. And that territory is in the Assyrian kingdom, close to the border of Iran, south of Lake Van, south of the Caspian Sea. This summary is stating not where Ezekiel started prophesying necessarily, though I'm sure the editors aren't any more sure than you and I are. But the summary statement then begins to be elaborated in the fourth verse, where the hand of the Lord, taking him and making him prophesy in Hebrew, is elaborated. And what is this that happens? And I looked. Now this is the elaboration of what happened to Ezekiel that the first four verses just said in preface. I looked, and behold, a whirlwind came out of the north, a great cloud and a fire enfolding itself. And the brightness was about it, and out of the midst thereof is the color of amber out of the midst of the fire. And out of the midst thereof came the likeness of four living creatures. And this was their appearance. They had the likeness of a man, and every one had four faces, and every one had four wings. And their feet were straight feet, and the sole of their feet was like the sole of a calf's foot, and they sparkled like the color of burnished brass. And they had the hands of a man under their wings on their four sides, and they four had their faces and their wings. Now, I'm going to anticipate a little, since we're coming to a station break. If I can find it quickly, I got, looks like 2 minutes. In this book, 5-5-2000, Ice, the Ultimate Disaster by Richard W. Noon. No, not this book. It's another one. I'll have to find it during the station break. They brought all my books in, which I asked. It's in a no less a Time Life book. Those are pretty good little books, too. They advertise them on TV, and you give your credit card, and 6 or 7 years later, you get the book. An eminent scientist takes Ezekiel's description. He was skeptical at first, didn't believe there's any way it could be a description of a flying saucer. Actually takes the description, designs one. I have a picture of his design. I'll show you that if you're interested, but after the break. Now you can continue to take calls until your phone starts being used by someone that's not real bright, and then don't answer it anymore. Come over here, Ron, so you can work around these books. And don't get the picture on the screen. Get right behind me over my shoulder. You got to find a way to get right over my shoulder. But don't put this on the screen yet, Tony, until I tell you to. Joseph F. Bloomrich, an engineer with the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, scoffed the idea of spaceship design. A native Austrian involved in the design of aircraft and rockets since 1934, Bloomrich had played a role in building NASA's huge Saturn V rocket, which took astronauts to the moon. If anybody knew about spacecraft design, he did. And I'm reading from Time Life books about the UFO phenomenon. Pretty good little book. Bloomrich was convinced that Ezekiel's wheel would fall apart under a rocket engineer's rigorous examination. But to his utter surprise, keep your voices down if you're taking calls in here. To his utter surprise, he found that the description could be adapted. And by the way, let me caution you, Voices of Faith people, the only thing I'm interested in taking calls on right now are my regulars calling in to meet their commitment. Somebody wanting to call and make speeches about UFOs, I'll give them a chance later when the music plays. But right now, the only calls, and I'm saying it to the audience so nobody gets offended, the only calls that are being received are those where King's Houses say, I'm calling to make my commitment. If you don't say that real fast, you'll be hung up on. Is that clear? Because it's teaching time now, not time to just have my money spent. I pay for that phone. Every phone call costs me. I therefore decide whether I want you to use it or not. I ain't out here looking for friends. I'm looking for people with intelligence. That has to be demonstrated. It's the rest of TV that plays to the bucketheads. Bloomrich was convinced that Ezekiel's wheel would fall apart under a rocket engineer's rigorous examination. But to his utter surprise, he found that the description could be adapted into a practical design for a landing module launched from a mother spaceship. In the prophet's vision, the glowing metal godhead. Bloomridge worked out the design in detail and published an account of it in a 1973 book titled The Spaceships of Ezekiel. Seldom, he wrote, has a total defeat, that is, a defeat of his original judgment, been so rewarding, so fascinating, and so delightful. According to Bloomridge, the four living creatures could have been four sets of landing gear, each with a wheel for maneuvering over the ground. The wings would have been helicopter blades used for final positioning prior to touchdown, while a rocket engine in the craft's conical body supplied main propulsion. Now, here's his picture of the man. Let me see it now, right up here where my finger is. And here is his design of the landing module. Now, when a rocket scientist, an Austrian rocket scientist with the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, played a role in building NASA's huge Saturn V rocket, sees UFO designs in Ezekiel, don't poo-poo it too readily. Let's just read about it. Ezekiel, chapter 1. I looked, and behold, a whirlwind came out of the north. Verse 4. A great cloud and a fire enfolding itself or catching itself, and a brightness was about it. And out of the midst thereof is the color of amber out of the midst of the fire. Also out of the midst thereof came the likeness of four living creatures. Now, I'm sure this is the first thing of this type Ezekiel ever saw. He's going to describe it as he sees it. And this was their appearance. He doesn't say they're men. Doesn't even say they're living creatures. He says they have the likeness of four living creatures. And this was their appearance. They had the likeness of a man. And everyone had four faces. And everyone had four wings. And their feet were straight feet. And the sole of their feet was like the sole of a calf's foot, and they sparkled like the color of burnished brass. And they had the hands of a man under their wings on their four sides, and they four had their faces and their wings. Their wings were joined one to another. They turned not when they went. They went every one straight forward. As for the likeness of their faces, they four had the face of a man and the face of a lion on the right side, and they four had the face of an ox on the left side. They four also had the face of an eagle. Now, I've read commentaries that go into spiritual fancy on these things beyond belief. Have you ever seen what pilots have been known to paint on the sides of their airplanes? Don't get spiritual where it isn't necessary yet. On the other hand, nobody knows what they were. Thus were their faces, and their wings were stretched upward. Two wings of every one were joined one to another, and two covered their bodies. Think helicopter blades. Now, the best way to interpret God's book is to start out assuming he means what he says and knows how to say it. In the book of Revelation, when the demons come out of the abyss or the bottomless pit, those are not helicopters. Those are exactly what they are described as, demons. But I don't know what this is yet. And they went everyone straight forward. Whither the Spirit was to go, they went. And they turned not when they went. And as for the likeness of the living creatures, Their appearance was like burning coals of fire and like the appearance of lamps. It went up and down among the living creatures, and the fire was bright, and out of the fire went forth lightning. And the living creatures ran and returned as the appearance of a flash of lightning. Now, as I beheld the living creatures, behold, one wheel upon the earth by the living creatures with his four faces. Now, as I beheld the living creatures, behold, one wheel upon the earth by the living creatures with his four faces. The appearance of the wheels and their work was like unto the color of a barrel. And they four had one likeness, and their appearance and their work was as it were a wheel in the middle of a wheel. I'm boring you until I look on your face. When they went upon their four sides, and they turned not when they went. As for their rings, they were so high that they were dreadful, and their rings were full of eyes round about them four. And when the living creatures went, the wheels went by them, and when the living creatures were lifted up from the earth, the wheels were lifted up. Whithersoever the spirit was to go, they went. Thither was their spirit to go, and the wheels were lifted up over against them, for the spirit of the living creatures was in the wheels. When those went, these went. When those stood, these stood. When those were lifted up from the earth, the wheels were lifted up over against them. For the spirit of the living creatures was in the wheels. He's just describing you can just about say life and spirit synonymous. And the likeness of the firmament above the heads of the living creatures, or the space above their heads, was the color of the terrible crystal stretched forth above their heads above and under the firmament, or the space, were their wings straight, the one toward the other. Everyone had two which covered on this side, and everyone had two which covered on that side their bodies. And when they went, I heard the noise of their wings, like the noise of great waters, as the voice of the Almighty, the voice of speech, as the noise of an host. When they stood, they let down their wings. And there was a voice from the firmament, or the space that was over their heads, when they stood and had let down their wings. And above the firmament that was over their heads was the likeness of a throne, as the appearance of a sapphire stone. And upon the likeness of the throne was the likeness as the appearance of a man above upon it. And I saw as the color of amber, as the appearance of fire round about within it, from the appearance of his loins even upward, and from the appearance of his loins even downward, I saw as it were the appearance of fire, and it had brightness round about. And the appearance of the bow that is in the cloud in the day of rain, so was the appearance of the brightness round about. This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. And when I saw it, I fell upon my face, and I heard a voice of one that spake. What was it he saw? It certainly was an unidentified flying object. Anybody going to argue with that? And this voice said unto me, Son of man, stand upon thy feet, and I will speak unto thee. And the Spirit entered into me when he spake unto me, and set me upon my feet, that I heard him that spake unto me. And he said unto me, Son of man, I send thee to the children of Israel, to a rebellious nation that hath rebelled against me. They and their fathers have transgressed against me even unto this very day. For they are impudent children and stiff-hearted. I do send thee unto them, and thou shalt say unto them, Thus saith the Lord God. And they, whether they will hear or whether they will forbear for their rebellious house, yet shall know that there hath been a prophet among them. Thou, son of man, be not afraid of them. But thou, son of man, 8th verse, hear what I say unto thee. Be not thou rebellious like the rebellious house. Open thy mouth and eat that I give thee. It's always the same. From the grandeur of the glory, he comes down to something he can do, but would not naturally want to do, as he tests his obedience. Don't you be rebellious like these people. I'm sending you to them. And when I looked, behold, a hand was sent unto me. And lo, a roll of a book was therein. Now, just imagine yourself, a young man captive, and this unidentified flying object appears, and after it's wahooed you into a near state of trauma, some creature begins to speak, or a voice comes out of the midst of the brightness of it, and a hand comes out. Got a roll, like a book, scroll. And here. He spread it before me, and it was written within and without. And there was written therein lamentations and mourning and woe. Moreover, he said unto me, son of man, eat that thou findest. Eat this roll. Huh? Now look at this unidentified flying object in this hand and ask yourself, you going to argue? Maybe tough to chew because it's probably made out of skin. Eat. Eat this roll and go speak unto the house of Israel. So I opened my mouth and he caused me to eat the roll. Now, I'm sure that from this spaceship, that roll was not your regular roll. I'll think of this every time I eat breakfast rolls from now on. He said unto me, son of man, cause thy belly to eat and fill thy bowels with this roll that I give thee. Then did I eat it, and it was in my mouth as honey for sweetness. And he said unto me, son of man, go, get thee unto the house of Israel. Now, this is where the traditionalists get lost. Get thee unto the house of Israel, and speak with my words unto them. Verse 11, go, get thee to them of the captivity, unto the children of thy people. Speak unto them, and tell them. Thus saith the Lord God, whether they will hear or whether they will forbear. Now we've heard of flying saucers that come and take people. 12th verse, then the Spirit took me up. He's already described the sound of this flying object when it moves. Here it is again. I heard behind me a voice of a great rushing saying, blessed be the glory of the Lord from his place. I also heard the noise of the wings of the living creatures that touched one another, and the noise of the wheels over against them, and a noise of a great rushing. So the Spirit lifted me up and took me away, and I went in bitterness. In the heat of my spirit, hot anger is one translation, but the hand of the Lord was strong upon me. Doesn't that sound like he was taken into that flying object? Then I came to them of the captivity at Tel Aviv that dwelt by the river of Hebar. That is why I said the first four verses were summary, because he's not yet to Hebar until this point. this unidentified flying object took him there. And I sat where they sat, them of the captivity at Tel Aviv that dwelt by the river of Chebar, or Hebar, and I sat where they sat and remained there astonished among them 7 days. There was nothing to astonish him about the captives in Babylon. He'd been among them for a long time. He is taken by this flying vessel to where the house of Israel is, carried away into captive well over 120 years earlier. I sat where they sat and remained there astonished among them 7 days. What was there to astonish him? Except he's seeing what he never saw before. It came to pass at the end of 7 days that the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Son of man, I have made thee a watchman unto the house of Israel. Therefore hear the word at my mouth and give them warning from me. Which he did. Verse 22, and the hand of the Lord was there upon me, and he said unto me, Arise, go forth into the plain. Not airplane. To you listening on shortwave. P-L-A-I-N. There, and I will talk with thee, or I will there talk with thee. They are already north of the Black Sea and the southern steppes of Russia. They're already there. As the apocryphal scriptures indicated, they had already decided not to go back to Palestine, and for a year and a half, because of the multitude, had passed through the headwaters of the River Euphrates, Caucasus Mountains, into the plain north of the Black Sea. Then I arose and went forth unto the plain. He'd been astonished there 7 days. He's seeing things he never ever thought, much less saw. And behold, the glory of the Lord stood there as the glory which I saw by the river of Hebar. It's the same unidentified marvelous object. And I fell upon my face. Then the Spirit entered into me and set me upon my feet and spake with me and said unto me, Go, shut thyself within thine house. And then he sealed his lips, or sealed his tongue. And that ends the third chapter. Now there's another chapter where this vessel appears again. But I ask you, does that sound like an unidentified flying object to you?
Yes, sir.
All I'm saying is you don't have to have your faith destroyed because of the possibility of flying objects. They've been around for a long, long time. What was it Elisha saw that took Elijah up in a whirlwind? He says, the chariot of the Lord and the horsemen thereof. We're not departing the Christian faith to talk about UFOs. If you agree with that, get on telephone.